Now entering Nerdist.com.
This episode of the Sex Nerd Sondra podcast is sponsored by AdamandEve.com. Go there, type in Sex Nerd, that's our promo code, and you get free shipping, 50% off almost anything in the store, 3 free DVDs, and a super secret gift. I just noticed that Adam and Eve just started carrying the Revel Body Sonic Vibrator. Yeah, if you're not on the up and up with brand new toy technology, the Revel runs with a magnetic motor, where similar to the Stronic Fun Factory toys, which are thrusting toys. But this is the first vibrator that I've seen that I think on the market that runs on magnets. I'm pretty darn sure this is the only vibrator that you can experience both high and low frequencies with, so like a real buzzy vibration and a real thumpy vibration. It's $129.95 at adamandeve.com. So again, go there, type in Sex Nerd at checkout, and you'll get free shipping, 3 free DVDs, 50% off almost anything in the store, and a little gift too. Enjoy.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Welcome to the Sex Nerd Sondra podcast.
Whoa, what are these kids doing in here? Hey, if you're under 18, go ask your mom. Now that we're alone, let's start the show.
Hey, you naughties. Sondra here. And this is an episode on something that every week it feels like I say I'm really excited for the episode. But this time I swear, I really not. No. It's an uncomfortable topic that I... it was fun talking about marriage this episode to two different friends. Three friends, two separate interviews. And I was uncomfortable because it kind of turns out that I have a lot of really odd notions about marriage, and my friends try and set me straight, but it was actually a wonderful exploration of this topic. I feel I need to point out that marriage equality didn't come up in these conversations, because this is more about just the experience of being partnered with someone for life. So that's just, what is that like? And that is anyone who wants to pair up with anyone. I feel like, you know, there are these fundamental questions about that must come up. So very fun. I hope you enjoy it. A few things. Let's see. I've been asking married people about what marriage is about since I was, the earliest I can remember is 16. And I just like, so is marriage easy? Is it hard? Like, what's the deal? Like, why do you do what? Like, I didn't understand it. And people say all sorts of things about marriage. And so I just wanted to kind of dig around, see what there was. So in a way, this episode is a kind of a culmination of a decade and a half of just bugging married people. And the couple that I am interviewing, I mentioned them in the bondage episode a little while back. So if anyone's wondering, because I later mention it. Anyway, a little tech note, near the end of the episode, it starts sounding kind of echoey. We recorded on several mics, and they started to not line up a little bit near the end. Mainly, I just want to make sure you know you're not going crazy. That's just us. So I'm getting on a plane today to get over to Washington, D.C. for a conference. It's going to be fun. Meet all sorts of people. Interview them. Oh, you bet. You bet I'll be interviewing all weekend. It's going to get crazy. Then I am teaching at Lotus Blooms on March 16th. It's a Sunday evening, and it's going to be on Playful Kink. Ooh, fun. March 17th, a Monday at 7 p.m., I'll be at The Pinch in D.C., a great bar, it's going to be so much fun. March 17th, it's a Monday evening, 7 p.m., we are rocking out some hardcore debate around monogamy. I want to explore this action. Tickets are at brownpapertickets.com, just type in Sex Nerd. It's going to be comedians, sex educators, and you. That's right. I hope you come out and help me hash this out. This is going to be great. We're going to have representatives from all sides on the monogamy issue, and I want to hear from you. So get at it. We're making Monday sexy again. I hope to see you out there, and I will catch you on the flip side. Enjoy. All right, Jason Porath.
Yep.
Are you ready?
I am so ready.
So I just interviewed a couple the other day when we had burgers. I did reference that I would be doing an interview with a married couple, and I did it, and I'm excited because it was on marriage. Like, I just really went in freaking out about marriage just generally. Like, do you, I mean, have you ever been married?
No. Well, not yet. The day is young. Let the record show the day is not actually young. We're recording this like past 11.
It's fine. It's fine.
Yeah.
On the internet, it's anytime you want it to be.
Yeah.
Like, do you want to get married someday?
Yeah. I think that'd be cool. Be what? Fun.
Why?
You know, I hadn't really been ever asked that question. It's never been like a pressing concern, I guess. Why do I want to get married? I don't know. I want to have a big party and invite all my friends, and I feel like tax benefits in general. But I don't know, beyond that, it's...
Yeah, Jason, beyond the party.
Beyond the party. I know, it's so hard to get to beyond the party for me. In my head, it's this symbol of commitment and like, no, I'm for realsies serious about this, no take backs, you know, pinky swear sort of thing, except like times a million. It's a pinky swear times a million.
It's a million pinky swears.
If only I had a million pinkies. Anyways, yes, marriage. Just because it's... for me, it's... I imagine it to be kind of a relief. There's such an amount of certainty and assurance in this that I don't have to spend all this energy searching anymore. I would feel relieved, like I would come to the end of a long journey only to start another one, a different one. I don't know, that's how I imagine it to be, but I've never been married, so what the fuck do I know?
God, we have such different like experiences. Like, you and I mean, neither of us have been married,
right?
I've been friends for a while now.
Uh-huh.
And it makes such sense. A long journey, a searching, and then the relief of that search being over and then moving on to a different journey. That makes complete sense. To me, that is so not what happens in my brain. Because for me, there's like fear of choosing wrong.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. But then also... for me, instead of it being like, because I enjoy dating. I mean, also, I haven't been like I haven't had a lot of dry spells. You know, I've had a lot of relationships, and I get that that's, you know, my experience. So I don't, and we have different experience in that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I experience the same crippling fear of choosing the wrong person for sure. But for me, I can't imagine proposing marriage in the case where I wasn't sure it was the right person.
How do you know?
I've only gotten to the point where like, you know, I felt some amount of certainty. Like, I could count the number of times on one hand. I might be able to only count it on one finger, you know? There is something different, I think, when you get to a point of just this certainty and comfort and knowledge. And because I haven't gotten to that point a whole lot, I haven't given the whole concept of marriage a ton of thought because it hasn't been even a possibility in my mind. It's like, it's the stupidest thing to compare it to, but it's like, I live in LA, buying a house. It's like, it's not even possible. It's not even on the horizon. Are you kidding me? Like, there's just no, I mean, theoretically, but that is not a concern I'm going to have in the next 5-10 years, it feels like. But then again, it could blindside me. I could be like, hey, I'm buying a house tomorrow.
Okay, I used to fantasize as a teenager about what wedding dress I would wear. Like, I would sketch it out. Like,
I think that's common. And did you pick out, like, names for your kids, too? I mean, I think these are fairly common.
I did.
Yeah. Well, okay, what are the names?
I don't remember. Spoiler. I highly doubt this. I wanted to name, if I had a daughter, I wanted to name her Esmeralda.
Like off of Hunchback of Notre Dame?
Shut up.
Bells, 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 bells of Notre Dame. I can't sing that high.
Hey, just stop. I'm embarrassed. I'm already embarrassed, and then you started singing. And then I was embarrassed because why would I do that? I like the name. Shut up.
That's a great name.
What about you? What about you?
The only name that comes to mind, honestly, and this is a weird reason why, is Robin. Huh. Because that was actually what I was going to be named if I was a girl. And I like the name.
It's a great name.
Also, it has a certain tie to one Mr. Batman. Bruce Wayne, if you're nasty.
Middle name Nightwing? Wait, no, what is it? It's not one. Is it Nightwing? Is that Robin's future?
God, don't get me in the deep nerdy hole. Nightwing is the first Robin, Dick Grayson, who graduated and became a different superhero called Nightwing, which is in turn named after an obscure Superman character. Just stop me. I'll keep going.
I'm fine with that because I've been talking about superheroes a lot lately with people, and people always talk about superheroes and in ways where it's not accessible to me because I didn't necessarily read the comics, but like I love superheroes in lots of different ways, but I never get to talk about them on my terms because it's always in some other way that people are entering that conversation. So, you know, but I always like enjoying the history and stuff because I just don't know those things. So, but focusing on the marriage thing.
Right. Marriage. That is what brings us together.
Do you believe that marriage is still like a happy marriage till death do us part, they say? You think that's possible?
Yes, but it's, and this is something that I've learned from my parents, is that it isn't you get to marriage and it's done and happily ever after and like end of the journey. Like I'd said at the beginning, it's the start of a new journey. It's something you have to just sort of keep fighting for all the time. Like one of the most eye-opening things my stepdad ever said to me was that, because he and my mom are my model for like an ideal relationship. They love the hell out of each other.
Ugh, luckies.
Yeah, they have been through some shit. Like they seriously, like, yeah.
They, like put each other through some stuff, or like they together have been partners through difficult outside influences.
Well, they both came into it with a lot of difficulties that they'd had in their lives from various their upbringings, and then they have gone through together and helped each other get past like a lot of stuff and gone through some difficult times together as well. And the most amazing thing that he ever said to me was that a lot of their friends had said, "Oh, you've got such an amazing marriage. You're so lucky that you're so into each other." And he's like, "Well, what they don't see is every night when we go home and lay in bed for at least an hour before bed and just talk about everything." And he told me this when I was maybe 15 or 16, and I'm like, what would you talk about every day for an hour? That's crazy. But just anything and everything, just fearless communication. Wow. Where they would just, and they had some stuff to talk about. So just having that out there, realizing that marriage wasn't the end, it was the beginning. Like you had to continually fight that battle, like all day, every day.
So powerful to hear. That's wonderful to hear, because my influences were that, I mean, just people will say like marriage is, then you're done. And I mean, through a lot of study and thoughtfulness and a lot of mistakes, I've discovered that, yeah, there's cultivation, whatever. And definitely, like, I cannot wait for people to listen to this interview with this very atypical married couple. Yeah, yeah, I cannot wait.
I want to hear it.
Well, you want to hear it?
I do want to hear it.
Well, you're going to have to listen when it posts.
Why you got to make me wait?
Because you don't get special treatment just because you're on the show.
I hate you, Mom.
Oh, that was weird.
Yeah, that was weird. Sorry.
No, it's good to hear about your parents because what burns into my brain are people who've been married who say that at some point you just run out of things to say to each other. And that was my impression, is that you just slowly die in this relationship.
Horrible.
But also there is, what I've heard is that there's that lovely comfort that you don't have to talk all the time. I get that. But to no longer have anything to say to each other just seems like that doesn't sit right with me. And yet that is what I've heard from multiple people. So I don't know. I mean, this show goes through sex and whatever, but like partnership is really an important part. And I was having relationships from when I was like 13, and I was freaking out like almost immediately, like, oh God, because then it became like deep love and you're 14 years old. And like, oh, clearly we're going to get married. And it's just like, oh God, are you the right person? But then I love you. I had to wrestle with these things from a very early age, and it was difficult. So I have a lot of stress around these things.
See, I can't. I'm still stuck trying to imagine not having anything. I mean, yes, I can understand. I've been on like long trips abroad or something, and you do end up sort of running out of things to say. And you know, some of it is you end up with such a level of comfort and understanding with one another that you almost have this psychic communication. You just sort of look at each other and know what each other are thinking. And that's, I've gotten to that a couple times, and it's super comfortable. But for couples that like day in, day out for weeks, months at a time don't have anything to talk about, that to me sort of betrays you don't have a whole lot going on in your life outside of your partner. Mm-hmm. And I consider that a dangerous place to be. Yeah. You know, you have to have a certain amount of curiosity, a certain fire, a certain spark. You can't just be comfortable all the time.
Yeah. Ugh.
Relationships. Ugh. Gross.
Yeah. Cooties. Yeah. Well, thank you for... it's funny. I feel letting out the... and talking about the stress that I feel around this actually like relaxes me.
Good.
And it's also fascinating. So, I don't know. Thanks for sharing about... And I didn't even know about your parents. That's really great to hear about.
Oh, yeah. They're amazing people. Hopefully you'll get to meet them soon.
It's true. They're coming to town. Anyway, friendship. Jason Porath, what is your website?
JasonPorath.com. You can also find me on Twitter at Jason Porath. I'm really, you Google me, I'm pretty much the only Jason Porath out there. So.
Excellent. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
No, thank you.
Oh, stop it. Mowage.
Mowage.
Oh, okay, you guys. All right. My friends, let's go on a journey. It is time to talk about something that I have been wanting to. I realize, like, the most recent podcasts have been really exciting because I get to talk about stuff that, like, I've been... like really on my mind lately, like all the things. And this time I'm going to delve into something that I care about a lot because I find it, I've been wondering about this since I was 12, probably, maybe earlier, probably earlier. What is marriage like, you guys? So I've got a married couple looking at me with big wide eyes. She's like, oh God. And we're about to get into it. Hello.
Hello. Hello, Sandra the Sex Nerd.
Ah.
That's our official title.
I have known you two a while now, and I, just FYI, and I remember checking with you two about this, but I had Rachel, our mutual friend, on a couple months ago, and she referenced, I don't remember what episode, I'll tell people, but she referenced a couple, a married couple that we know that is just really good at being married, and that's you two.
I remember that.
So I'm so excited. Yes.
We're excited. We're really glad to be here.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. Okay, so I brought you here to talk to you about marriage. Because, yeah, you two seem really good at this. And do you realize that you guys are, like, really good at, like, you were, like, all of us, all the people that know you. I'm speaking for everyone that knows you. No, I'm not.
There's, like, 12 people.
No, there's, you do just seem really calm and very comfortable with each other in a way that is reassuring. Mm. I have never been married, and nor have I ever even cohabitated with someone, except for like this few couple months, which were horrible. But that was not because of the cohabitation, but that's another life story. So I am a certain amount, I feel a certain amount of trepidation around like partnership. So can we get into that a little bit?
Sure.
Sarah, you're looking worried.
Well, I maybe because I'm nervous.
You're nervous?
I'm nervous.
I thought you were scared. Well, I'm nervous. Marriage is, okay, first of all, it's till death do you part, technically.
Yeah.
Or yes. It ends with a lot of lawyers and drama, I hear.
Not necessarily. No, because this is my second go around. I don't know if you, did you know that?
I did not know. You've been married before.
Yeah. That's why I'm so good at it. I had practice.
Oh.
So the mistakes made the first round can't happen. Those, like in theory, don't happen again. Just different mistakes happen, but.
Yeah. If you're doing your job right, you learn and you don't make those mistakes the second time around.
Yeah, I thought statistically people in their second marriages, those fail a lot too. But I get a sense that you two are doing a lot of stuff right. But what Gregory, what are you doing differently in this marriage that you didn't in your first one?
Paying attention to who Sarah is and what she needs mm-hmm. of her own accord, independent of me and the relationship. And then also, based on that understanding and an understanding of myself, we have a big thing about crafting an understanding of the we, that third entity that arises in any intimate partnership, whether you're married or not, whether you're monogamous or not. And that understanding the we and what the we needs and placing the needs of the we mm-hmm. over the needs of the individuals is, I think that's one of the keys to our success.
Really?
Yeah.
That's so interesting because for me, I tend to Venn diagram way too hard with other people.
Mm.
So for me, it's more working on individual stuff to not prioritize the other person. But then I guess it's some people prioritize the other person over themselves.
Ah.
Other people prioritize themselves over the other person.
True.
So you're saying that there's a third entity, which is the we.
Yeah.
And so, but then the we is then more important than either of you individually.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then after the we, is it you individually? And then thirdly, the other person? Like, how does this work?
I don't know. I've never like numbered it off before in order of importance.
I think because our experience, you can correct me if I'm wrong, our experience is that when you prioritize the we like that and you get it right, you don't have to worry about your individual. Your stuff is taken care of as a result because it's just it flows
the
out
the
of
relationship.
That. It flows out of that space.
This is highly advanced. Yeah, let's back up a minute because I'm like, this is not. I don't even get it. I don't even understand. Number one, how do you choose who to marry? I mean, you did it once before, Gregory, and like, but like, how did you know? Okay, let's. Like, how do you know?
I don't know. I just woke up and I knew.
What? Like the day you two met or the day after you two met or like?
No, like 5 dates in. I was surprised. I was caught off guard by it.
Uh-huh.
That all of a sudden I was like, can I love this man already? It just seems so soon.
Well, did you know in 5 dates that you wanted to marry me?
No, I suppose that's true. I knew I was in love with you.
Okay.
Yeah, because to me, love is different than like, I mean,
marriage.
To feel.
When did we start thinking about getting married?
I don't know.
I don't either.
How long have you been married?
Almost three years.
Okay. All right, good. All right. So this is where we're at. All right, almost 3 years. How long have you been together total since you started dating?
Gosh, we're in our 9th year together.
Yeah, over 8 years.
Okay. All right. Okay. All right. Okay. All right. Mm. Did you live together before you got married?
Yes.
For how long?
Oh, it's too much math.
I can do the math here. Five years?
Yeah. We waited. We moved in together after a year of being together.
All right.
We went slow.
Yeah.
Even at first, like I guess this all gets back to that we were being traditional before we realized we were being traditional.
I don't know, everyone in New York,
an urban couple,
moves in together in like 3 weeks.
Because
you're like, oh, my apartment lease is up. I'm going to save money.
I just find that to be such, I mean, I get it's a helpful thing to share rent, but it's also not necessarily to the health of your relationship to move in that fast.
No, certainly not. Yeah. It takes time to build the intimacy.
Right.
To really know. Yeah.
And just...
So we dated. I think we took it. Like, it's I'm almost embarrassed to admit this, but not quite, which is why I'll admit it. I was given a book right before I asked out Sarah by a friend, and it was a book, Mars and Venus on a Date, John Gray.
God.
Right? Yep, I know.
Oh,
so I could hear the stomachs turning out there and everything. And all I can say is you see the evidence before you of at least taking some of the principles that he outlines and using them as guideposts, you know, not just rules of thumb.
Yeah, there's good two takeaways. I think just generally there's some problematic stuff in those books, but I haven't read them.
What I know is that he lays out kind of a framework for building a relationship. And so whatever you think, regardless of his ideas on men, women, roles, society, blah, 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 he'll lay out a framework of, okay, the first thing you're going to do is it's called dating, and you go out on dates with one another, and you're not exclusive during this time. You, in fact, should be dating other people. You should be asking other people out. And there's things that you do during the dating process. There's information that you gather, whether consciously or unconsciously. But the more aware of it you are, the more successful you're able to move on to the next stage. And I'm probably going to get these stages wrong, trying to remember them now. But like, there's dating, and then once you date until you know, like, okay, I think I'd like to get to know this person more. And maybe become intimate with them. So you keep intimacy withheld during dating, and you just kind of are on your best behavior at this point in time.
Intimacy withheld.
Yeah, you don't let it all hang out. You don't bare your deepest soul. You're just really like getting to know each other on a very, very like surface level, and just sort of sussing out, do I even really like this person? You know?
That's actually a really good point, because some people get into like emotionally intimate, and then that naturally creates bonding.
Yeah.
And you're not necessarily bonding with the right person that's compatible with you.
That's true.
So
yeah.
That makes sense.
And the things that you like about them will quickly become the things that drive you nuts if you're not careful. So take your time about it at first and really spend time with the person, but keep it light. Mm-hmm. And we didn't even, how long was it that we made love? 58?
Yeah.
And we dated every 2 to 3 weeks. So there was time in between our dates. You know,
one day every two to three weeks. It just so happened that Greg was out of town and I was out of town. Like, it kept being the case that we weren't in town at the same time a lot, which was nice because
it forced us to take it slow, which worked really well. And and we were dating other people at the time.
Yeah.
And then but at some point we got clear, like, okay, we like each other. Let's see what happens on the next step. And so the next step is then just you become exclusive. Mm-hmm. And then you explore that space for a while. Take a few months to explore that space.
Well, okay. I mean, were you both in like, do you think also the headspace you were both of you at in your lives, like was a spot like, oh, if you two had met a year earlier or a year later, do you think that it wouldn't have gone the right way? Like, it was just great timing of where you both were at also.
Oh, I absolutely think so.
Yeah.
Agreed. Yeah. Because I think we're both still getting over past relationships a year or two before that, you know, so.
Yeah. Yeah. I was still deep in grief from the implosion of my 10-year relationship, 7-year marriage. Before that, and that a year before I met Sarah, and I actually took a year of avowed celibacy, moved to New York and said, I'm not going to date. I'm not going to do anything funky. Yeah. I just took a big old breath from the whole thing. Cause I didn't have a clue who I was outside of heavy, intense relationships. Mm-hmm. And so I just wanted to find that out.
And I was just dating people in New York, enjoying being single and living in New York and having fun.
All right. Yeah.
Which is, I think, important too.
Yeah.
Date lots of people. See who you like, you don't like.
Yeah. So timing was huge. And there was also a great deal of intention, though. Like I said, I can't credit everything with this stinking book, but the book was a big part of it. But I had a huge intention to just get it right, whatever that meant, whatever that looked like. So I took my time. I was very careful. I took the lead in sort of crafting the pace and the space of the relationship itself, and which allowed Sarah to just kind of relax into being courted. Romantically, you know, and just kind of being a woman, letting her like, okay.
Well, do you agree with that statement, Sarah?
I mean, I liked someone calling me and asking me out and having like suggestions on things to do out in the world. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
I always think it's kind of New York too. You can't just like hang out at someone's apartment. Mm-hmm. You know, you go out in the world and you do things. Mm-hmm. It was good. I had a great time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, your dating times.
It's true.
So you move in together, fasting forward. That sounds so weird. Fast forwarding. Yeah. That feels better. You move in together. Why get married years after you've been cohabitating? I mean, yeah.
Oh, why? Because.
I mean, I don't know. It's to me. Okay, this is what the question is. Like, okay, I mean, you're living with a person. I'm guessing you're saving a lot of money living together. You're enjoying companionship and partnership, and you can choose to do things like have kids or whatever, have a business or, you know, go on a trip. I mean, and marriage isn't necessary. Is it like, was it a religious thing that kind of came in, or like family pressure, or just a sense that it was time, or like what?
Yeah.
It just seemed like the next step. And I'd never thought about marriage before Greg. It never was on my periphery even. But, it seemed like committing ourselves to one another was the next step of the relationship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so you've been there. I know it's a kind of a cliche line in media, sitcoms, movies, whatever, and amongst guys that, like, it's just a piece of paper. It doesn't mean anything. It doesn't change anything. It most certainly does, in my experience. It changes things quite powerfully.
Yeah. What changed?
Well, just the act of, first of all, you go through a ritual. Rituals are powerful. Whatever, I don't know why or how that works or whatever, but rituals are powerful. There's a reason that they've endured for millennia.
And we had a really good...
Yeah, we had a rocket.
We had a
wedding.
Hippie rabbi from Berkeley. You know? Yeah. Like, she was great.
12 of the most amazing people in our lives in this beautiful little town up in Northern California. It was just magical. But, and so there's a ceremony and you craft vows. And so there's all this thinking and you get so clear on like the deepest sentiments that you have towards this person. And then you express them nakedly in front of all these other people. Mm-hmm. And if you believe in some sort of divine power, you're also that's hooked into it. And so whatever your emotional connection is with that. So all, you know, from a sheer neurochemical brain state thing, it's like, it just does stuff to you to go through the marriage ceremony. And then afterwards,
form a new family.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
Forming a new family, meaning you two becoming a new family.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Whereas before that point, did you think of yourselves as individuals happening to, kind of be together and walking a journey for a time instead of it being like, I feel like when I date someone that it feels like family already. Like I feel like, oh, this is my partner and we are partners in crime. Like it.
Yeah.
But like even more so, like what changed exactly?
It's a tough question here.
I'm sorry if it's personal. No. I'm just like, I'm digging in.
Not
getting
that it's
in.
Personal, just describing.
See, you're trying to articulate it and that's interesting. It's a good challenge.
Because it feels like a biological change almost, or like DNA. I don't know. It feels like we became more physically connected.
We did, absolutely. And mentally and...
Yeah.
I don't know if you're a bit of a businesswoman. For anybody out there who's in the business world, think of the difference between having a business relationship or a business partnership done on a handshake, right? And one where everything is spelled out in a contract and you both sign that contract. Mm-hmm. That's different. You can't just walk away from that. Mm-hmm. The terms are explicit and clear. It becomes like 100,000 times more real.
Sign a contract. We signed a ketubah, which is a Jewish marriage contract.
Oh, okay, I'm like, what? That sounds like
there's
a
witnesses.
Ketubah.
Yeah. A ketubah. There's witnesses. You sign it basically saying you're going to be there for this other person, much like any other business partnership almost.
Yeah.
So not just a like legal contract that, you know, but an actual thing.
It's, you know, it's, we wrote it. You can do it lots of different ways, but, you know, it was our words in there. And it's just, you have, you know, your brother signed it. My friend Brooke signed it. Like, they witnessed it. We have, like, a contract in place.
Yeah, there's just it's all about, for me in some ways, I guess, thinking about it now, the different levels of reality and solidity to anything that starts off as just sort of a mental concept. You know, think about if you're with a person and you love them, but imagine if you never said it. You just thought it was only inside your head, this notion and this idea, and you never expressed it in words. How different is that from a relationship where you actually look a person in the eyes and say, I love you. Mm. You know, I want to do these things for you. And then you demonstrate that love and you reinforce the words with the behaviors. And then, okay, so then there's that difference. But then what's the difference between telling a person that you love them and telling them that you love them and you want to be with them for the rest of your life? And saying it that clearly.
It's
and
pretty
then
intense.
It's, yeah. And then now take that level and go to the next level and declare that in front of a group of witnesses that you're closer to than anybody else in the world.
Yeah. The act of community involvement when it comes to marriage is really, I find, fascinating.
Yeah.
Because it's a huge declaration.
It is. And it makes things... It's hard to say. It just makes things more real.
Was there any fear that, like, should I not do this? I mean, because that's pretty intense. I mean,
none.
No.
None?
None.
No.
Wait, this feels unique. It's like, where did you two come from?
Originally Cleveland, Ohio.
Millville, New Jersey.
Because you two are so... Okay, for instance, here's another question. Just skipping ahead. Sex life. One thing that I am afraid of is the story that media and other people tell and joke about in movies, like, all of the time around, oh, you're getting married, cool, good, say goodbye to your sex life, ha 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 ha, sad.
Yeah, say goodbye to it. It's gonna change.
Well, it changes, but it always changes.
It's better.
It does get better.
It's better.
What's better about it? Tell me everything.
It's deeper, more connected, more, I don't know, freer.
Yeah,
freer. Yeah.
Feels better.
Yeah.
I know you better. And the safer it gets, the more we know each other.
The more you talk about it.
The more we explore that. And that's, I don't know that that's, like, for, it's interesting to talk about this with you, because in your arena of life and the space you're in, I think these kinds of conversations and developments maybe are more normal or natural in general. I think that that's not the case for maybe most people. And for us, sexuality was never a very intentional conversation in my life before I met Sarah.
Mm-hmm.
And
likewise.
Yeah. And so I just, having that connection, I've gone to depths of vulnerability and presence with her that I didn't even know were possible to think of before.
Was it just your chemistry? Like, oh, well, look at that. Oops, like, this is really connected and stuff. Like, we should keep doing this. Or was it, like, an intentional, like, let's get deep, you guys. Like, well, to each other.
I don't...
Like, where did it come from?
You're like...
Because a lot of couples don't talk about sex.
I'm going to say both.
Yeah.
You know, the chemistry... I mean, if the chemistry weren't there, we'd be screwed. You know, that's a given.
We just have to be with this person all day that you're like, eh.
All day.
We spent inordinate amounts of time together.
Insane amounts of time.
Because we work from home. We make music together.
Mm-hmm.
We hang out together. We have so many mutual friends.
Yeah. Most of our socializing is done as a couple.
Yeah.
Not all of it, but most of it.
You two seem like soulmates in the way that makes me angry.
Aww.
Aww. Mission accomplished.
It's do you two believe in, I mean, Sarah, do you believe in soulmates?
I do.
Do you feel like you found your
soulmate? Because I think I'm with my soulmate. From this life and the next is what we always say.
Oh, yeah. Stop it. You're going to make someone cry who's listening.
Yes.
Yeah.
But you didn't believe in soulmates before Gregory?
I never thought one way or the other.
Oh, okay.
It just wasn't part of my lexicon.
Yeah, you were just a sort of a square, upper middle class Jewish girl from Cleveland. You know, what is soulmate wasn't in the lexicon of that part of the country, really.
That's pretty true, actually.
Yeah.
And how about you, Gregory? Did you believe in soulmates or?
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. I believe there's more than one for everybody. There's lots of soulmates on different levels, you know, where
like
I,
six.
I, Yeah, six, four or six. It's okay. One or the other.
Even everyone knows it's four or six. Come on.
We all play different roles for each other. We all have, mm-hmm. I think of them as spiritual contracts. We made up little rules to little games before we came here. And we're like, oh, I'm going to do this. And then you're going to try to do that. And you're going to try to remember to remember. So I have lots of crazy stories about this stuff. But yeah, mm-hmm. I very much do believe in soulmates.
Okay. At what point were you like, oh, this is totally maybe a soulmate right now?
Oh, what point? Probably about 8 months in, I'm going to say. Yeah. It was much slower for me, the understanding.
Oh, right. Because, Sarah, you were 5 dates in. You were like, oh, man, you said you felt like you were in love. Gregory, did it take you 8 months to feel like you were in love, or 8 months beyond that to feel like soulmate? Because that seems like a big jump.
Yeah, soulmate was like that was a whole other thing too. Which is that's sort of for me the baseline conversation for okay, does this mean marriage? That's when those thoughts started creeping in, and a lot of it had to do with for me and being where I was at in life and my personal development. Just suddenly finding myself open to the idea of having a family, having children, which is not something I ever entertained. Before I met Sarah as well, I didn't want kids and want anything to do with them. They annoyed me. That changed.
Huh. Now, okay. You two are pretty solid. Like, just in my observations of two people together. I mean, but those are also my assumptions. I have a couple questions. I mean, I have a lot of questions. But first... When you see other married couples, either it's a TV show where there's like a problem or friends who are going through difficulties, do you guys have like a certain smug, like, oh, we're so much better at this than you guys?
I'll let you field that one first.
Oh, God. You said better?
No, better at this. Marriage thing, relationship.
Oh.
We avail ourselves of tools.
Mm-hmm.
I think we've done therapy. We work hard.
Yes, we do.
Yeah.
Because it's work.
It's a lot of work.
What is this work? Is like tiring work?
Sometimes.
Yeah, exhausting. Yeah.
This is the most important relationship in my life.
Mm-hmm.
So if this isn't working, nothing else is working either. Mm-hmm. Cause
it ain't.
Life sucks at that point, you know? <'Cause you're
laughs> It's true. Disconnected from you means disconnected from life at this point. Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's actually, the disconnection thing.
Yeah.
You two, work to stay connected.
That's the most important thing.
Yeah, because I'm not like all, I'm not trying to sound hippy-dippy here, but like I definitely get a vibe when we hang out. Like there is just a certain like energetic frequency that you two are on. They're just like, you guys are like team right
here. That's the we. Yeah. You're literally feeling the space of the we. That's what
we would frame that. You can feel it.
You can.
Yeah.
Everybody feels it. You know when you're in the presence of that depth. Mm-hmm. Of love, it's not that we love each other more than anybody else who's in love. It's the way we cultivate that space, like mm-hmm. a garden or like anything else that's living.
It's just because when couples are fighting,
mm-hmm. yeah.
you feel that.
Yeah, you feel
that. It's there, and everyone's aware.
Oh man,
it's the same thing.
I'm really glad you brought this up because it really, like, we're sitting here talking about all this, like, magical, flowery romance stuff and the chemistry and blah, blah, blah. But yeah, all of that gives you a great baseline to work with. That's what all that means. Love is such a beautiful notion and it's a great starting point. And so many, I see so many relationships where there's so much, like, turmoil and drama and everything. And then there's always that, but I love them. So,
yes.
And it's just, and it's kind of a tedious sort of conversation because love is a verb, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's like, okay, well, you love them, but how do you love them? Let's talk about that. Let's look at what does that loving look like? What do you do for that person? How do you express your love? How do you share that love? How are you there for them? How do you support them? How do you help them be, all those things.
The verb of the love.
The verb, yeah. It's a how do you love? And so I think how we love is the key to our, I guess, success is the word. It's incredibly deliberate. It's incredibly hard work. Like you said, Sarah, we have a lot of tools. We're always seeking new tools. We're always helping each other to know when to apply them and when they're maybe being misapplied, which is painful.
A little touchy.
Yeah, I mean, when you two told me like a little bit ago, like, oh, we're going to couples therapy, I'm like, you guys don't need couples therapy.
Yes, we do.
And I remember like Gregory and I were having a conversation in the living room about like couples therapy or like explaining it to me. And then like Sarah just comedically in the kitchen, you like threw a towel or something. Like there was this funny moment. I'm like, oh, I guess there might be tension. Like, but it doesn't feel like you two are hiding or pretending to be happy when you're not. It just feels like you're acknowledging that there is some, like where there is a disconnect, you two are working through that.
Oh, yeah.
With someone. How has therapy helped your relationship? Because I imagine that people go to therapists when there's crisis, like
yes.
Only when it's the worst.
We went to couples therapy before we even got married.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just because there were, you know, fights are always the same. Mm-hmm. It's always the same fight. Yeah, it sounds different. It's, you know, yeah. It's dressed up differently, but it's always the same things happening over and over again.
Can you give me an example?
People fight about money.
Okay.
But, you know, you fight around it a lot. Mm-hmm. Or you fight about each other's families. Mm-hmm.
But those are the arenas that the fight shows up in. And like, at the risk of speaking for you, I feel like our fight, mm-hmm. from my perspective, generally boils down to these two perspectives. On Sarah's side, it's, you're telling me that I'm doing it wrong. Mm-hmm. Some variation of that. She perceives criticism. She perceives an affront. She perceives judgment or whatever. And on my side, it's, you can't tell me what to do. Mm-hmm. That's my, you know, I got that. We've figured out what you revert to the age of 14, I think. You become 14-year-old Sarah, something like you get locked in around that emotional space there. And I'm 15-year-old Greg when we fight. That's the modes that we go back to. Everybody reverts in those fights to like a certain age of emotional development where you kind of froze.
Sarah, do you agree with what he said?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. We're like, yeah, we, you know.
Okay.
We're like teenagers.
So,
and it's not like they're good fights.
No.
Follow question.
Yeah.
Were these ages, like, does that mean that they line up with where the brain is developing during that age? Or are these things that, like you found something at that age in both of your personal lives that tie back to that age?
I think it's both.
Yeah.
I mean, like, I didn't know if there was like, well, around 14 is when your ability to see someone else as separate from you. I don't know. I just don't know why 14 and 15 are the ages.
We came up with those, first of all.
Oh, because
that's how I feel. Because that's how I feel.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, I don't have my means of expression, like, disappear.
Mm-hmm.
I can only, like, say fuck you a lot, you know? It's just a, yeah, it's just that's the space I get in.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. So interesting. What are the tools that you're talking about? Like, what has really helped you two in terms of tools? Like, just like, if like, obviously people are listening, like I'm asking from, like, I've been wondering, like, as I have fear of what does that mean to say till death do us part to another person? Cause it's like, that's a long time, you guys.
If you're lucky.
Yeah.
If you're lucky. Yeah, if you're lucky, but then I think of people who are in marriages who are not happy.
Yeah.
I don't want to do that. Like, I want to cultivate.
You won't.
Right.
You got nothing to worry about.
I mean, sure, we can get into like, Six Nerd Sandra's commitment for me. So we can just get into that. But but that's not what this episode is titled.
Sure.
Probably. If people are listening, I mean, whether they're, you know, 18 or 40, or no matter what stage of life they're in, like, that would be really helpful. Like, what has helped you to cultivate?
So funny. I feel like we're, you know, our marriage is so young.
Yeah.
I think about people who've been married like 60 years.
Yeah, definitely. But I mean, it's but to me, I mean, your partnership before marriage, I mean, the marriage to me is like a gateway and sort of a ceiling. Like you're sealing the envelope, like, done.
Okay.
You know? Mm. And so you have been relating to each other for, almost a decade now.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
Tools. Going, I guess, from the most recent and the most powerful backwards, or the modality of therapy that we're in right now, it's interesting. It's very California. Mm-hmm. It's very Santa Monica. It's very like...
What does that mean? I grew up in Santa Monica. What are you talking about?
Well, there's this, you know, there's a consciousness on the West Coast, you know, like I'm from the East, I'm an East Coast boy. And so, but I'm also, there's part of me that's a cosmic space hippie, like all the other people out here, you know, it's...
I'm giving him a look because he is very, whatever that means, cosmic space hippie, he's being honest.
You know, I don't go to Burning Man, but I'm friends with a lot of burners, and there's, you know, there's a particular kind of consciousness out here that acknowledges things like energies, you know, and consciousness and connections and processing and stuff like that. And I'm not quite a process junkie, but I do like processing. And so Santa Monica, this therapy that we're in, there's a technique that this woman, it's not hers, but she's schooled in it. It's called crossing the bridge. And
is this that like 18-inch thing?
Yes.
Yeah. You two told us? Yeah, I don't understand. Like, you have to sit.
You sit 18 inches away, face to face, holding hands. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. And the idea
gazing
there is...
Gazing intently into each other's eyes.
Heart to heart, 18 inches. Knee to knee, 18 inches.
Eye to eye, 18 inches.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, your heads, your brains.
It's the brain literally waves.
This is the interesting about this therapist we're with, that all this, she's got all this sort of hippy-dippy stuff, but what it really is it's all neuroscience, packaged in a way that Californians can consume comfortably, right? Mm-hmm. So she loves me, I think, because she can talk to me about the more sort of scientific aspects of it and be transparent about that, because I'm fascinated by the brain. So 18 inches isn't just some magical number that hippies came up with for sit close and gaze into their eyes. Mm-hmm. There's literally something called limbic resonance, the limbic systems of our brains, which is where the emotions are held and where those experiences sort of come from, all the nerve centers that say, feel love, feel hatred, run away, all comes from the limbic centers. When human beings are 18 inches or closer for any extended period of time, especially if they're looking into each other's eyes, the brain waves in their respective brains begin to... come into alignment. They come into sync with each other. You can see electrically, like on the meters, you'll see the needles start to move together up and down. And so it creates a sort of a bond there that then it opens up a space for when you share, if you respect that space.
And then how you share, it's a bit visual, which is why I connect to it. You literally you form a bridge from one person's brain to another.
You literally?
In your mind's eye.
Is it made of wood?
It could be.
If you want a wooden bridge,
build
your wooden bridge.
You get one.
Yeah, I'll Green Lantern that shit. Okay, so like...
And then you cross it.
And then you get... It depends. Invite. You get invited over by whoever's doing the crossing. And because one person does the listening and one person does the talking, essentially.
Is the person talking over the bridge to the other person, or which way is it?
The person coming over the bridge is listening.
Yeah.
Because you're going into a neighborhood in your brain. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I'll cross a bridge into Sarah's brain and she'll invite me over and I'll accept the invitation. And from that moment forward, she only expresses things in pure statements of I, which is like, it's really insanely difficult to do. And you'll get it wrong a million times. But once you get that purity of language down, where you're saying something that's only about yourself, it's completely safe then for the other person because they're very unlikely to get triggered, you know?
Question.
Yeah.
I talk about I statements versus you statements. And I have... I don't know about on the show, but I mean, I've told people, like, instead of just starting with I statements, go even further and try and take the you statement, the word you, completely out of it as much as you can.
No, you have to fully.
So when you say pure I statement, does that mean the word you does not, you try and not use that word at all?
You can't use that word.
Even like, I feel really uncomfortable when you walk through the door and this, like, would the word
that's
you.
Not just that's about not about you.
See, the thing is, it's a distinction. We're not talking about making I statements. We're saying, tell me something that's only about you. So if you involve me in that story that you tell, it's not just about you anymore. It's about me and you, or maybe it's just about me, but the thing is, it's not just about you. So you say, I'm trying to remember like a good example. You have something?
No, I don't. I'm trying to think of one as well.
show in the moment.
When I get home, I like 15 minutes of quiet. That's just about me, right? Mm-hmm. As opposed to when I get home and you come up and start asking me questions, I get tense. You're halfway there, but mm-hmm. that's not all the way there. Mm-hmm. And then the other person is then you're implicating them in your crap. Mm-hmm. So even if that's not your intention, that's what happens there.
It feels like there is some implication. That's a good word to use. Mm-hmm. I was just talking at this all-women's college, Smith University, and I talked about taking the you completely out. And there was something in the room where everyone just sort of, like everyone kind of relaxed. There was something about talking about that really, I also realize it's a college tie on talking about processing and communicating needs there's lots of communication conversation around. So there's something, I don't know, I just noticed that in the room. I was like, that's very interesting.
Yeah, because it's safe. It creates a safe space.
But then in turn, the other person has to repeat back what you say because you're in this safe space.
As accurately as possible.
Yeah.
Would if you would, like, Sarah, if you had said the when I get home thing, would I say when you get home, you need 15 minutes of stuff? Or would I say when I get home?
No. When you.
So I can... As a listener, as
you're mirroring,
the
curiosity,
yeah, you're mirroring back you. What they said.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Whoa. Yeah. Because the idea is that this person is speaking clearly and purely about themselves, and you are
and
hearing
you acknowledge it
accurately.
Okay.
And then once you, when you find, and it's like, it seems so simple and easy, but man, it's not. And the more emotions are around the subject that you're talking about, the harder this stuff gets. Mm. And so this, you know, just, To button it up, this crossing the bridge thing and the pure, just learning to communicate purely in I statements can stop the worst fights in their tracks.
That's right.
Stop them in their tracks.
Because then you hear the other person.
You get vulnerable all of a sudden.
Yeah. What is that percussion instrument called? So that's
the drum?
It's a snare? No.
A hat.
Sorry. It's the thing that goes clash on a drum set. We're in a studio filled with a drum set. Okay, we're running out of time. So what is one more, like, just really helpful skill that you two have picked up over the years? And I realize that you two have probably been implementing these things for a while now, so it must be strange to have to remember the blueprint somewhere back there.
What you got, girl?
Put your heads closer together. Figure it out.
I know. We don't really go to bed angry. Maybe.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Is that a real thing? Because I need sleep sometimes to get over a thing. Really? Like, really don't go to bed?
I mean, we have, you know, I want to say 3 or 4 times in a relationship we have. But if at all possible, just don't do it. Just don't do it.
Yeah.
Just it's not that you, like, have to be all, like,
it's
super loving
up
and connected. No. But at least have the wherewithal to muster up the energy to remember that you actually love this person.
Yeah. And you like them.
And you like them.
Yeah.
And just say that. Even if you don't feel it in the moment, be like, you know what? Right now, I'm really, but I like you and I love you.
We're going to work through this.
I look forward to not feeling this way. And hopefully tomorrow we can get there. Good night.
Okay.
Done.
Yeah. Okay. All right. I like that.
It's practical.
Respect is practical. Okay. Because, I think that's the thing is when, because I remember just grueling arguments with past partners, and then it'd be like 2-3 a.m. and I'd be, you know, when you're just like fuzzy headed and you're just going around in circles and it's not working.
You shouldn't argue that long.
I've learned a lot since then. but I mean, it's taken years of work with myself and others. But I just remember, and then that thing that people tell you, don't go to bed angry, and you're like, okay, but then we're not allowed to stop this, but it's horrible. Mm-hmm. and then it's, what do you do? So it's being able to hit pause and then give a hug. And
That's another, I would say that's another one of the biggest tools is learning to identify when you've been triggered. Saying that, you know, being like, hold on, I'm in that place there. And recognizing absolutely nothing we say or do right now is going to do anything but make it worse, no matter what your intentions. And doing what you need to do to get back to yourself.
Yeah.
That, you know, that means one of you takes a walk, one
does
the dishes, whatever the heck it is. You know, everybody's got their things. Yeah. And just recognize, having the discipline and the self-control to recognize when you're heading down a bad path and just stop.
All right. Okay. All right. Yeah. I like it. You guys, thank you for talking to me about all the things. There's so much more. We didn't even talk about genitals.
So much more.
So much more. No, I really, I appreciate it.
So much more.
Can I slip one more thing in really quickly, which you can either use or not use, but it's,
sure,
it's, it just feels really important to me to say this, one of the, along the lines of tools and things, mm-hmm. Be willing to sacrifice any and every aspect of yourself for the greater good. You know, just don't be sacred or precious about any part of your personality, any habits you got, anything you picked up along the way that you think is like, this is who I am. It's, odds are it's really not. It's just how you be. Know the difference between who you are and how you be. And the latter, just put it on the chopping block at any moment if it serves the partnership, because you will both be so much happier as a result.
I can't end there because I have issues with those statements. That would be irresponsible of me to just be like, all right, thanks, Gregory.
Sucker. Good night. Thank you.
No, go back.
Tell me your issues.
First of all, I like that. It's nice and clean. Like, know the difference between who you are and how you be. But that seems really vague and I need clarification.
Sure.
Because I loathe the advice, and it's so easy, and I'll sometimes automatically say this and then I go, why did I just say that? Just be yourself, because being yourself doesn't, that's so vague, and it's like who am I? Because I change all the time. I'm very fluid, and like, what does that mean?
Yeah.
In any moment I'm a different person than the last moment. So to know how you be, like, you mean like how I brush my teeth is who I am. That doesn't, no, because you could change the direction.
Correct.
And maybe be better at dental stuff. You know, how you choose to arrange your dishes before washing them is something that people will like fight about, which is really funny. But
right.
But it's a thing that people
exactly.
fight about.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's what I'm talking about.
And so those don't I
habits.
Habits.
Okay.
Behaviors.
Yeah.
Behaviors are not who you are. That's what I'm going to say. How you be. I mean, literally, the things that you do with your physical body most of the day. Those are just things that you do. The who you are aspect tends to not change very much over time. Like, I'm an introvert. Mm-hmm. That's never changed ever. Maybe it will in the future, but all signs indicate that for, you know, the rest of my days, I'm going to be a hardcore introvert to various mm-hmm. degrees. And so understanding that I can't, Sarah's the extrovert of the group. I can't go out to parties four times a week the way that she wants to. I just mm-hmm. can't do that. I can't give her that because it costs me too much. Mm-hmm. Energy, my physical health, all that stuff.
But I don't need you to either.
Because you respect that.
Yeah.
Yeah. You don't ask me to change that aspect of myself.
I go without him.
Right.
Yeah.
And I love that you two can, you don't always have to be together. You know, and you can go out separately. Because some people, like, they feel like they need the other person. So it's good.
Yeah. We're individuals.
Yeah. I mean, we had to figure that out, though.
Yeah. But there's very few, in my experience with myself, and that's all I can speak to, there's very few things about me that I think are actually truly, I know this is who I am to the core, and I can't budge that. Even if I wanted to, I couldn't. So it would be mm-hmm. disingenuous of me to offer that. But almost everything else is up for grabs. Not that I'm just going to give it away like candy, like, oh yeah, I'll change that for you, baby, whatever you mm-hmm. need, blah, blah, blah. But like to really be able to honestly examine that and offer that up mm-hmm. if you both truly believe that's what's needed.
Mm-hmm. That's great. That's okay. Great. Ugh, so many things. It's all so good. And I will say that the whole feminine masculinity thing, like, because Gregory and I have been, like, debating a little bit about it on, like, in an email, but, like, I want to know more. But I realize that an entire episode just unto itself is talking about feminine and masculine energies, because I have feelings about it and brings up stuff, and I come from a different perspective than you. So, like, at some point, we'll probably sit down and maybe bring in some hardcore feminist and we'll just, like,
bring it on.
I'll listen to that podcast.
All right. Sarah, Gregory,
Sandra, Gregory,
Sarah.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Go Team Fun.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.